So this week's parsha is Parshas Chukas, and it is also the Shabbos that is before the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, which we call the Friedeker Rebbe's Chag HaGeula, Festival of Liberation, and also his birthday. So that's on Monday and Tuesday. His birthday is on Monday, and 12 and 13, which is 12 Tammuz, and 12 and 13 of Tammuz is what it's called Chag HaGeula, it's Festival of Liberation, 1927. The previous Rebbe was arrested by the Soviets, and he was held on capital charges. He was held in very strict conditions and interrogated and beaten in prison also. He stayed in prison for a while, and he was let free eventually on the 3rd of Tammuz. The 3rd of Tammuz, which of course today is the Rebbe's Yahrzeit, many years later. He was sent away on the 3rd of Tammuz to Kostroma, to a city in the edge of Siberia, where he was supposed to spend 10 years in exile. But only 10 days later, he was suddenly let free on the 12th of Tammuz, and it was a national holiday of some sort. They couldn't give him the papers until the 13th of Tammuz. And therefore the 12th and the 13th are celebrated. And then he had to leave Russia, Soviet Russia. He moved to Riga, to Latvia. Eventually he moved from Riga. He followed the yeshiva to Warsaw, to Poland. And he stayed there for a little bit, a little over a year. And then because of World War II, he escaped Nazi Germany, who had already taken over Poland. And the previous Rebbe came to America in 1940. So, this is a special Shabbos, Parshas Chukas, and it's also the Shabbos before Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Tammuz. So the Rebbe has a beautiful talk on this week's Parsha. The Rebbe explains that one of the central themes in the Parsha, and Rashi actually makes a big deal about it, is the fact that Miriam passed away. The Torah tells us that Miriam passes away. And when Miriam passes away, the people started complaining that they had no water. Whole bunch of complaints. Why did they complain they had no water? Because the miraculous well that followed the Jews throughout the desert stopped. The water stopped. And Hashem tells Moshe, famous story, you know, speak to the rock, and Moshe hits the rock. Whole story. Of course, the water came back. That's what we read in this week's parsha. The water came back, and the Jews did have water. Again, the same miraculous water. The Medrash and the Gemara says that the three major miracles that the Jews experienced in the desert, what were those three major miracles? Number one, they had man from heaven every single day. The food that they had was miraculous. Rained down from Shemayim, rained down from heaven every day. The man. Number two, they were protected by Anane HaKavod, clouds, special clouds. There were clouds on all four sides of them, a cloud that went in front, a cloud that protected them from above. There were six clouds on all sides that were protected by clouds. Gemara says, and Rashi quotes this, and the Torah actually says this, that your clothes did not wear out. You never had to wash your clothes. Your feet did not get cracked and split from walking in the hot desert. And the reason was because the desert wasn't hot. The clouds would smooth out the sand. They would take away all the mountains. And Rashi tells us that they took away all the mountains except for three that were left for a specific purpose. One was to forgiving Moshe, forgiving the Torah to the Jews. Another was for burying Aaron. Another was for burying Moshe. And the clouds would protect from sandstorms. And they would protect from all kinds of things, the sun above. And they would also clean up after the Jews. So that's what the clouds did. The clouds were miraculous clouds at Nani HaKavod, and the miraculous clouds protected the Jewish people from all of these things, cleaned their clothing, and smoothed out, got rid of the snakes and scorpions. And to remember these clouds, we actually have an entire holiday, the holiday of Sukkot. The Torah tells us that the holiday of Sukkot should be celebrated in order to remember the way Hashem took special care of the Jewish people during the 40 years in the desert. That's straight from the Chumash doesn't mention the word clouds. It says that I sat the Jews in sukkahs and booths. And Rashi explains to us that those sukkahs weren't actually sukkahs. They were the clouds of glory. So far we have two major miracles. The man falls from heaven. The clouds protect the Jewish people. And the third major miracle was that they had water in the desert, wherever they went, enough water for everybody. Gemara says that these three miracles were in the merit, in the schus of the three siblings who were all great tzaddikim. And the siblings were Miriam, the oldest one. She, in her merit, was the water, the well. Aaron, the second child who became the Kohen Gadol, in his merit were the clouds that protected the Jewish people. And the man was in the merit of Moshe, who was the youngest of the siblings, but of course he was the major prophet, the one who gave us the Torah and so on, did all the miracles. So these three miracles of the man in schus of Moshe, in the merit of Moshe, the clouds in the merit of Aaron, and the water in the merit of Miriam. Now, when Aaron and Miriam pass away, and we in this week's parsha, they both passed away, that we read the story of how they pass away. As a matter of fact, just to finish the thought, when Aaron passed away, the clouds disappeared, and the nations around them who were looking to make trouble for the Jewish people, like Amalek and other nations, the Canaanite, certain from the Canaanite nations, who knew the Jews were coming to attack them and to take away their land, decided that this is an opportune time to start up with the Jewish people. And they tried to, in fact, fight against the Jews. And they were repelled in the merit of Moshe, and the clouds returned. So when Miriam passed away, the water disappeared, and Moshe is the one who hit the rock eventually, spoke the rock, hit the rock, and the water came back in the merit of Moshe. When Aaron passed away, the clouds, the protection that Hashem was protecting the Jewish people was lifted, went away, and it came back in the merit of Moshe. And of course, the man was always in the merit of Moshe. So the Rebbe has a beautiful talk where he explains what is the lesson, what is the message of these three types of miracles and protections, and what does it mean that Moshe is the one who eventually was the one who, in his merit, all three came, and why initially was it not in the merit of Moshe, but in the merit of Aaron and Miriam? If Moshe can do it, how come Aaron and Miriam didn't do it? The Rebbe says as follows, just to make a little digest of the Rebbe's explanation. The Torah, in general, is the source of our energy. It says that the great sages tell us that when the word Yisrael, which of course were all the children of Yisrael, or each of us called Bnei Yisrael, is an acronym for the words Yesh, Shishim, Ribo, Otiyot, LaTorah. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah. What that means is that every single Jew gets their energy from Torah. That is the pool of energy that Hashem has set aside for powering the Jewish people. At the same time, by us studying Torah and by us fulfilling the mitzvahs in the Torah, we increase the energy that Hashem puts into Torah, and we allow that energy to flow through, and we thereby close the circle. And that circle is Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, the Zohar says, the three things that are connected, seamlessly connected. Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Eibishter, Hashem, the Torah and the Jewish people are seamlessly connected. One depends on the other, and one gets energy from the other. We get nurtured from Hashem. Hashem gets nachas from us. We get energy from Torah. The Torah gets energy from us. The Torah becomes greater. As a matter of fact, it's beautiful. But when you think about the concept, the beautiful quotation from the Mishnah that we say, when we finish studying any kind of study from Talmud, from Mishnah, we want to say a Kaddish, we say that Rabbi Chaim Nekashu says, Hashem wanted to give a lot of merit to the Jewish people, and therefore he gave us a lot of mitzvahs, and then we quote a pasuk that it says, Yagdil Torah v'yadir, the Torah should become greater and more hallowed, more special, more amazing. Yagdil Torah, the Torah should become great. V'ya'adir, it should become more hallowed, more respected, more amazing. How does the Torah become more hallowed, more respected? By us Jews studying the Torah, by us Jews fulfilling the mitzvahs. So it's not just that we get energy from Torah. We are able, through the power of our neshamas, to actually give energy back to Torah. In other words, we view Torah as this living, breathing entity, which is why, of course, parenthetically, we respect the embodiment of all of this, the encapsulation of all of this, is the Torah scroll. The Torah scroll is, we treat a Torah scroll just like a human being. We carry a Torah scroll with reverence. We kiss the scroll when we take it out of the Aron Kodesh. We kiss it when we put it back. God forbid a scroll gets burnt. We make a funeral for the Torah scroll. We treat a Torah scroll literally like a fellow Jew. Matter of fact, the Gemara has a question, and the Gemara says that, no, you can't do it, but the Gemara has a question whether if you're missing a 10th person for the minion, can you count the Torah scroll as a 10th person for the minion? The Gemara says you can't do that. You have to have a living person. That's not the way sages enacted. But the mere fact that the Torah has even a question, and is as if we're treating the Torah as a fellow human being. And the reason is because we view Torah as a living, breathing entity, as something that is giving us energy, but at the same time, becoming greater, pulsating with energy, becoming greater with energy that we give back to the Torah when we learn Torah. So Moshe is the one who gave us the Torah. We say Torah tzivah lanu Moshe. The Torah was commanded to us by Moshe. So ultimately, the prophet, the individual who is the most responsible for causing this energy flow is Moshe. Moshe is the one who gave us Torah. The Torah that Moshe gave us in a way that we should understand. And Rashi again explains to us in Chumash and the Gemara as a whole description of how did Moshe teach the Torah to the Jews. Whenever he got a message from Hashem, he would first tell it to Aaron, then he would teach it to Aaron's children, and then he would teach it to the elders, the Zakenim, and then to the Jewish people. And Moshe would make sure that every Jew understood. As a matter of fact, we read the famous story where Yisro, Moshe's father-in-law, tells Moshe, you're spending too much time individually taking care of every Jew's personal problems. Why don't you appoint a hierarchy of judges? And in fact, Moshe, at Hashem's agreement, does do that. But until that time, Moshe's first instinct was to take care of every Jew's problem, little litigious problem, whatever argument they had with their neighbor, whatever problem they had, Moshe would directly and individually take care of each individual issue that arose in the Jewish people. In other words, Moshe is the symbolism par excellence, not just the symbolism, but the enactment, actually, of an individual who is giving each person according to what they need, according to their level. Something that is very much tailored to individually fit the needs of each person that Moshe comes across and Moshe has contact with. That is, Rebbe explains, the idea of studying Torah. Because when you study Torah, you have the knowledge that according to your level, and according to the greater your level is, the more you can understand and the more you can study and the more different things you can study and contemplate and so on and carry those concepts even further, the less you understand. For a person who doesn't know any Torah study at all, Rebbe says, in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says, saying reading the Shema is a major accomplishment in Torah. So just reading the Shema for a person who has no experience with Torah study. A person has a lot of experience, that person is expected to study as much as they can all day long, in fact. So Torah is the study of Torah, the intellectual comprehension of Torah. That's a very individual type thing. Everybody is according to their level. That is emblematic of Moshe, who was very much concerned with each individual's needs on a very personal level. Then there's an aspect of Torah. And again, keep in mind that why are we talking about Torah? Because Torah is where the energy comes from. So there's an aspect of this pool of energy that Hashem gives the Jewish people, which we call Torah, that is not individually tailored, but rather it is community-wide. It's spread throughout the entire community of Jews, and it's equally felt by all Jews. What is that? The Rebbe says, That is Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice for Hashem. Or if you want to look at it from a different perspective, the ingrained belief that we are Jews and we are connected to God. Every Jew believes that. Now, what does it mean that we have to do? What do we have to do because of that? That's already a different story. The Yetzirah mixes in, and people have different levels of information, different levels of study and appreciation and knowledge. But every Jew appreciates the fact that they are a Jew and they are connected to Hashem. And the proof is, I always tell this to people, if you go over to a most secular Jew and you tell that person, you know, I'm ashamed of the way you're acting. You're a bad Jew. They will punch you in the nose, and they should punch you in the nose. Because how do you call somebody a bad Jew? They'll say, I'm not a bad Jew. I give charity. I'm good to my mother. I'm good to my child. I believe what I believe. But I'm a good Jew. This is what Judaism demands. Every Jew has an attachment to Hashem, whether they recognize what it is, or it's so subconscious and so buried that until an anti-Semite comes and calls you a dirty Jew or a bad name, that wakes it up. The Rebbe gives the example of a story, an anecdote the previous Rebbe related, and when he was in Warsaw, for that year, he was in Warsaw, as I mentioned to you, from 1940, when the Nazis came into Poland, they were in a very serious situation, bombing Warsaw, like nonstop bombing. And people were very, very frightened. Many people got killed in the bombing. And the previous Rebbe relates an anecdote that he was once in a shelter in a basement with a bunch of other Jews, many of whom were totally secular and believed they had no connection to religious Judaism. The bombs fell and they were falling very close, and one bomb hit particularly close. Thank God nobody was hurt in the basement, but one bomb felt it was about to, who knows what, explode on their heads, and everybody together yelled out, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Even the most secular Jews, who ordinarily wouldn't be caught dead saying Shema, but when they were about to, actually, they thought they were about to die, then they said Shema together. And the Rebbe says, well, it's possible that the previous Rebbe's presence and his amazing spiritual presence also woke that up in these previously secular Jews. And even after that, they remained secular Jews. But at any rate, the Rebbe says, what did he wake up? He woke up their personal neshama. So this is something they had all the time. It was just being ignored and covered up. So there is an aspect, therefore, of Torah, meaning an aspect of the energy that we receive from this body of energy that we call Torah, that is equal amongst all Jews, and that is this drive to remain connected to Hashem no matter what. And if somebody wants to disconnect us from God, we will fight, we will push back, we will give up our lives, even our physical lives, in order to maintain and retain our spiritual lives, our spiritual standing on Hashem. That was in the merit of, this is symbolic and emblematic of the Anani HaKavod, the clouds of glory. The clouds of glory covered all the Jewish nation at once, whereas the man was something that each person ate according to their speed, according to their level, according to their taste. But the clouds of glory was something that is even for everybody. Everybody was inside those clouds. And this is the merit of Aaron. Why is it the merit of Aaron? Because Aaron was the one who treated all people equally. He didn't look at differences in knowledge, differences in practice. He was, as the language of the Mishnah, he was Ohev es Habrios. He loved people just because they were created by Hashem, and he would try to bring peace between people regardless of who they were. He was a great lover of the Jewish nation, and he went out of his way to create peace between husbands and wives who were arguing, friends who were arguing. Didn't matter to him what level you were at on your mitzvah practice. That didn't mean he wasn't interested. It didn't mean he didn't help people. He was, after all, the Kohen Gadol. He absolutely helped people. But he related to all people the same. So this is, whereas Moshe, in order to approach Moshe, you had to have a specific reason or thing. And Moshe was not as approachable, even though he was initially taking care of all the troubles of the Jews. But then we read that after the Torah was given, the second tablets were given, he moved his camp outside the tent. And, I don't know if he was approachable every single day in the way that Aaron, it seems, was approachable. So Aaron is therefore symbolic of and emblematic of the Anani HaKavod, this idea that all Jews have something in common. What is it we have in common? Mesiras nefesh for Hashem, self-sacrifice for God, self-sacrifice for our faith. That's what we have in common. And we receive that energy, again, from Torah. So when Aaron passed away, Moshe was able to draw down and draw upon his connections with Torah in order to renew this level of energy that the Jewish people receive. And also we talk about, finally, the Be'er, the well of Miriam. And the Rebbe explains that water, which comes from the well, which what the Jews had miraculously in Miriam's merit, what does water do? Water is what allows the body to remain hydrated. It allows the blood to flow. It allows the system to work comprehensively. So without water, the lack of water in the body, the nutrients don't go from one part of the body to the next. The blood is not as much as you need, and therefore you have problems and being tired, and the people that are, God forbid, older people. I mean, it's a great cause for all kinds of issues, as you know, is dehydration leads to a lot of other issues, because the nutrients and the energy, the proteins, enzymes, whatever it is that you need, don't flow throughout the body, plain and simple. So without water, you might have good stuff in one side of your body, but it doesn't go to the other side of the body. You need water. So what is water, therefore? Water is the idea that these concepts can be brought down from the highest parts to the lowest parts. And that was the nurturing nature of Miriam. So, of course, Moshe was nurturing. And, of course, Aaron was nurturing. But Miriam was especially nurturing. Where do we find that Miriam was especially nurturing? The Torah tells us, and who was Miriam? Miriam was the one who used to help the women. She was the midwife. She was the one who helped the women give birth. And she was the one who helped bring life into the world. How more nurturing can you get than that, bringing life into the world and helping the woman at the moment of the childbirth? And that was Miriam's greatness. And when Miriam passed away, the water stopped. This concept, this blessing that came through Miriam's great, great, righteous personality stopped, and it was brought back, however, by Moshe. Again, because Moshe was able to look inside the Torah and bring back this concept that Rebbe explains to us, that even though Aaron's nature and Miriam's nature was not Moshe's primary nature, it wasn't his go-to nature, but Moshe went out of his box, so to speak. Moshe went out of his accustomed way of doing things when he saw the need. The Rebbe concludes that the ultimate message for all of us when we read these concepts, when we read about the Moshe and Aaron and Miriam and everything they did for the Jewish people, and we read about how Moshe is the one who was able to then later renew the blessings that came in Aaron's merit, and he was able to renew the blessings that came in Miriam's merit when he realized that it was necessary to be done. So it all teaches us that we need to look out for the good of our fellow Jew in ways that are comfortable to us and even in ways that are not that comfortable, that are not our first go-to way if we see the need. If we see the need, we need to make sure. Now, it doesn't mean you got to do everything yourself. You can bring partners and you can have people help and so on, but it's up to us. If we see a problem, we have to be responsible for fixing it either personally or by finding the right person to fix it. And that is the message as a leader of the Jewish people, Moshe. Now, of course, the segue to this is the 12th of Tammuz, the 13th of Tammuz, where the previous Rebbe writes that he was redeemed from prison, from, in this case, the exile to Siberia that he had been sent. It's not just him, but rather, he says, all those who hold the Torah dear, all those who care about Torah, all those that care about the Jewish people, all experienced redemption in that moment that he was redeemed. Now, the reason he said that was, the only reason he was put into jail is because of his activities, not for his personal needs, not for his personal benefit or gain, and not for his personal views, but because of his activity in making sure that the Jewish people in Russia had caterers to go to for their children, kosher food, had mikvahs to go to for the women, and were able to continue practicing their religion. So he was put into prison because of his activities and his work on behalf of the community of Jews. And therefore he said, when I was let out from prison, this was an amazing redemption. It was something that the Soviets were not forced to do, even though there was a lot of pressure put from here in the United States and externally in other countries, but still, it was all done diplomatically. There was no military force. There was nobody forcing the communists to let the Rebbe go. They decided that it was in their best interest to let the Rebbe go and to leave the country. So this is, the Rebbe says, a sign that a true leader not only is concerned for his people in the things that he is able to do, but he somehow, some way, he moves heaven and earth and he finds out how to do whatever he can do in every aspect. And we need to follow that example. That's the Rebbe's ultimate conclusion. That we need to follow that example, and we need to realize that we have been given energies and abilities far beyond what we're actually using. We should dig a little deeper in ourselves and realize that if we see a problem, it means that we have the power to fix the problem. And if we think we can't, it's because we're not digging deep enough. The Rebbe once said, I remember by Rav Brengen, the Rebbe once said, what this person says to me, he bangs on the table, he's raising money for the yeshiva, the Rebbe says, he bangs on the table, and the guy gave $1 million. The Rebbe was, using a little hyperbole, bangs on the table. He had a conversation with this guy, some rich donor, and the guy agreed to give $1 million. The Rebbe says, this person gave $2 million. If he would have banged harder, he would have given $2 million. So yeah, he got $1 million, which is a huge sum of money, even in those times. We're talking about the late 80s. I forget exactly when the Rebbe said it. I was standing at Bregen at the time. Yes, it's a huge sum that he got, and he should be very happy and proud of that he accomplished. But he could have accomplished double if he would have banged harder or banged the second time. So this is, the Rebbe was never satisfied with accomplishment as long as there was need. Person says, I accomplished, but there's still a need. You didn't complete the need that's there. It's true that you accomplished it. It's a wonderful thing and you get credit for it. By the end of the day, the other person still has yet more need, or there's another person that you haven't accessed, that you don't even know about, that has need. So therefore, that's the message from this week's parsha. And it all boils down to the name of the parsha, which is chukas. And chukas is something that is deeply engraved. It means a decree, chukah, but why is it called a decree? Because it's engraved. The king used to engrave his decree on a stone tablet, and nobody should be able to change or it shouldn't get lost, So this is the idea of being engraved, something that we have deep inside of ourselves. These energies, the Moshe energy, the Miriam energy, the Aaron energy, these are all energies that each Jew possesses, because we have been given instruction, direction, and energy by Aaron and by Moshe and by Miriam and by all of our other great leaders. And we have these energies inside of ourselves, and it's up to us to access them. It's up to us to first to realize that we have them, to access them. And if it's a little hard to access, we need to dig a little more deeper. We need to go a little deeper engraving. And we will ultimately uncover that which we have inside of ourselves all this time, which is the ultimate connection, as I mentioned earlier, as the Zohar says, between our neshama and the Torah and Hashem. So that is a little message for this week's parsha, Chukas, which is 2 days before the 12th.